Welcome to Happened Here. People, places, and the stories they tell. I'm Jasmine Elcock, host of this episode, The Middle Earth Club. They say that if you can remember what happened during the 1960s, you weren't there. Fortunately, enough people have retained memories from that decade to pass down stories of its coolest club. Named after a realm in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, and containing just as many extraordinary creatures, the Middle Earth Club was where all the young dudes hung out in the 1960s. In this episode, we will tell you about the spaced-out ambience that made the club such a haven for hippies, and the Middle Earth debuts of two out-of-this-world future stars. Without further ado, let's begin. The Basement, 43 King Street, Covent Garden. A Trip to Middle Earth, written by James Rampton and performed by Stephen Fry.
The room is thick with the pungent odour of substances that may or may not be legal. It is early 1968, the heyday of the hippies. A cloud, is that the right collective noun, of scenesters are floating around the cavernous cellar at 43 King Street in Covent Garden. Welcome to the Middle Earth Club. The place is heaving with hippies. Always eager to show their defiance of the man, these flower children are drawn by the alternative Tolkien-esque name and the hedonistic anti-establishment vibe of Middle-earth. They are congregating at the epicentre of London's blossoming peace, love and understanding movement. Middle-earth is to the flower power generation what the Royal Albert Hall is to promenaders. Wafting around the club in a hallucinogenic haze, the hipsters no doubt have the words of countercultural guru Abby Hoffman ringing in their ears. The cry of flower power echoes through the land. We shall not wilt, let a thousand flowers bloom. The whitewashed walls of the club are a blur of dizzying, ever-changing, multicoloured blobs projected from a tower looming over the stage. The whole place reeks of psychedelia, amongst other things. The DJ is adding to the consciousness-expanding ambience by playing a medley of records from Middle Earth's impressive roster of budding experimental artists. David Bowie, Pink Floyd, The Doors, Captain Beefheart, Jefferson Airplane, The Birds. Other live acts to make a splash at Middle-earth include the Exploding Galaxy Dance Group and the felicitously named Tribe of the Sacred Mushroom. Crazy name, crazy guys. Led by Lynn Darnton, their party piece is a play based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. These cats clearly know how to have a good time. You probably won't be surprised to hear that Middle Earth is subject to frequent drug raids by the police. One night, officers arrest a member of a band for possession as he is about to go on stage. On another occasion, they confiscate a device called the Trip Machine from the dressing room. The mind boggles. The police do not always arrive in uniform, either. One evening, the DJ spots a shifty-looking bloke at the back of the rammed club. The DJ calls out over his microphone. "Ah, there's Inspector Bloggs at the back, trying very hard not to look like a plainclothes policeman." Boasting a square-looking short back and sides, the copper is still wearing his mac in the sweltering heat. Among the groovers sporting caftans, tie-dyed pantaloons, and hair that hasn't seen a pair of scissors in years, he sticks out like a sore thumb. In keeping with the surreal atmosphere in the club, Mark Bolan of T-Rex, another pop star on the cusp of fame, storms the DJ's booth one night to present him with an unexpected gift, a hamster called Biscuit. The startled creature promptly leaps onto a record and starts riding the turntable as if it were a fairground carousel. Now that's what I call a magic roundabout. A visit to Middle Earth is a trip, in every sense of the word.
Another trippy evening at the Middle Earth Club was provided by a performer who many thought came from Mars. The Basement, 43 King Street, Covent Garden. A Painted Tear. Written by Hamish Roberts and performed by Zach Ghazi Torbati.
Go ahead, Houston, I'll follow
you. Roger.
A sunny Sunday, May 1968. Halfway along King Street stands the oldest building in Covent Garden, number 43. A Baroque mansion, its walls have kept the secrets of kings, leaders, and war heroes. But this afternoon, beneath the building, a different kind of history is about to be made. For several months, the mansion cellar has been living a new life as a psychedelic music venue. It's not yet 3 p.m, but already the dark, cavernous space is packed with punters, the atmosphere charged. Recent performances by Jimi Hendrix and The Who are still quivering in the air. A spotlight settles on the stage. A keen silence follows. The first act is up. No one's yet heard of this David Bowie. But not even his friends in the audience recognize this otherworldly creature that steps into the light. Its face is a smooth, unblemished white, a canvas for cartoonishly large red lips and Bowie's electric asymmetric eyes. A single tear of black ink rests frozen upon its left cheek. Bowie's angular features flesh out this exquisite makeup with the same eerie charisma that will one day animate his onstage persona, Ziggy Stardust. For now, though, Bowie is not a rock star, or even a singer. He's a mime artist. Without a word of explanation, he performs a piece he has devised himself, Jetson and the Eagle. It tells the story of the Chinese invasion of Tibet, conveying his story solely through movement. He expressed how, though the Tibetans were struck down, their spirit will fly for eternity. Just how much of the story reached the audience, it's hard to say. Barely 21, Bowie had already spent years trying to be a rock star, to no avail. Then, in 67, he met the influential choreographer Lindsay Kemp, who gave him a crash course in avant-garde mime and the creation of onstage personae. Rock and roll suddenly seemed like an inferior art form. Rock stars glorified themselves on stage, whilst, as a mime, Bowie could remove his most particular features, his voice, his face, and through movement alone, inhabit whatever creature he liked. Of course, Bowie didn't hide his voice forever. According to him, however, he never became a rock star. Instead, he used his experience as a mime to transform his discarded rock star ambitions into a theatrical performance.
I wanted to define the archetypal messianic rock star, Bowie later said of his most famous creation, the extraterrestrial alien Ziggy Stardust. Using the trappings of mime, I dressed him and acted him out. I had trouble explaining that it was a theatre piece.
Bowie's messianic rocker was better than the real thing. Ziggy outshone his contemporaries, even as he caricatured them. Who would have thought that, of all the acts who performed that year beneath 43 King Street, the obscure mime artist would become one of the club's most famous alumni, and that he would do it on his own terms. Because Ziggy Stardust did not come, as his fans believed, from Mars, but from another art form altogether, light years away from rock and roll. Avant-garde mime.
From one star man to another genius, who plugged into the power and the electricity of Middle Earth. The Basement, 43 King Street, Covent Garden. I could see everyone's fillings falling out. Written by James Rampton, performed by me, Jasmine Elcock. The moment you walk through the unassuming front door and down the steps into the Middle Earth Club in Covent Garden, you're instantly plunged into a purple haze. It is approaching midnight on 25th January 1968, the zenith of the counterculture revolution. Clearly floating somewhere high in the stratosphere, without the use of interplanetary craft, a crowd of hipsters have crammed into the club. Sporting more floral patterns than the Chelsea Flower Show, all the young dudes have come to see the hottest new act on the planet perform. The audience's spaced out, incoherent jabbering is interrupted by the DJ announcing,
"And now, ladies and gentlemen, the man you have all been waiting for, Mr. Jimi Hendrix!"
And the previously docile, dopey fans suddenly explode into life. Dressed in bottle green crushed velvet trousers, a magenta silk waistcoat, a floaty yellow and pink shirt, and matching bandana, Hendrix saunters on stage, the incarnation of cool. You can't take your eyes off him. He is one of those rare performers who is simply mesmeric before he even plays a note. Bending sound with astonishing feedback and distortion, he strikes the magnetic opening guitar chords of Wild Thing. And, as football commentators always put it, the crowd goes wild! As Hendrix follows up with the extraordinary, otherworldly timbre of Voodoo Chili and the compelling riffs of Purple Haze, he is a man possessed. One moment, he's dropping to his knees and playing his guitar through his legs. The next, he is continuing to strum the instrument whilst performing somersaults on stage. Then, in a coup de grace, he starts to play his beloved Fender Stratocaster with his teeth. At this point, the crowd are so electrified, it's as if they have been directly plugged into the mains. Singer Terry Reid recalls the effect on the crowd of a Hendrix performance.
"He gets up, all soft-spoken, and all of a sudden, he breaks into Wild Thing, and it was all over. There were guitar players weeping, they had to mop the floor up. He was piling it on, solo after solo. I could see everyone's feelings falling out."
It's still not over, though. But how can Hendrix top that, you ask? By setting fire to his guitar, of course. Tapping into his fascination with ancient rituals that demand sacrifices to placate the gods, he explains,
"I decided to destroy my guitar at the end of a song as a sacrifice. You sacrifice things you love. I love my guitar."
And so, Hendrix closes his set with a truly show-stopping moment that he first road-tested in a celebrated performance at the Monterey Festival the previous summer. Pouring lighter fuel on his guitar, tossing a lit match on it, leaving it burning centre stage and strolling off into the wings. Still the coolest man in the building. Now that's what I call an incendiary performance. Please, don't try that at home. Happened here. People, places, and the stories they tell.
Hi, I'm Robbie Stamp, one of the founders of Happened Here. I myself peered over the railings looking at the basement and really loved the thought that all this happened in one of the oldest original buildings in Covent Garden. It's just a really good example of why we love Happened Here. Do come and find out more about us at happenedhere.com.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share, tell your friends, and leave us a kind review and a rating on your podcast platform of choice. It does make a difference. But for now, everybody involved in Happened Here, the writers, the hosts, the performers, thanks you for listening. Do come again. We've got lots more stories to tell.